Once a month, we hear what it is like to live with mental illness. Our guides are the people of Southern Oregon Compass House in Medford. It's built on the clubhouse model of community mental health care. It is a place where people with persistent mental illness come together to support each other and their shared place. Compass House Executive Director Elizabeth Hazelwood will join us shortly, but first we'll hear this month's focus interview with a clubhouse member. James has had a lot of complications along the way. He talked to Galen Thoreau, Compass House Outreach Coordinator.
Life for me started out, I ended up being a foster within the family to my aunt and uncle in Washington. I was born in California due to child abuse. And through living with them, also figuring out a lot of different things. But I was always one that had to have his homework done. I mean, it was just like insane. How much time I would spend on doing homework and future homework that's not even given yet, which I didn't recognize at that time. And then make sure everything was in their spot and everything like that. And so I guess I had a little OCD as I was growing up.
So you feel that you were experiencing symptoms of mental illness even as young as childhood?
Yes.
What's your earliest memory of experiencing those feelings?
I think even kindergarten.
Kindergarten.
Yeah. So 6 or 7, because wow. I was also, the way my birthday falls, it falls into the school year. So I was held, or I had to wait an extra year to get into kindergarten. But, I still, as a child, had to clean my room because, you know, things would get out of sorts. But I had two brothers, so we all shared one room. And, as I was growing up, I got to where my bed had to be made perfectly before I went to school. And not necessarily that my mom and dad were saying that, but it was just, it had to be done. And if it wasn't, I tore it apart and redid it.
So you can recognize some pretty strong kind of compulsive behaviors.
Yes, looking back.
In your young years.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very fascinating.
And there was a lot of other things going on during growing up, too, though. I remember as early as probably 6 for a lifestyle change. That affected me strongly. Everyone's like, you know, you need to get a girlfriend. And I'm like, no, I don't. So I was thinking that was more driven as mental health as well. That's why when I joined the service, to become, as they say, become a man. And that led me into even more quandary. You know, it's just, wow.
So when did you join the service?
I joined the service officially in 1986, a delayed entry program. I still had a year of high school to go. I was 18 when I joined, but I wanted to finish high school, so I didn't actually go in until August of 87. And then I got out August of 90 for other reasons. It was still before the Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
At this point, you had not been diagnosed with a mental illness.
Nope.
And you obviously were not receiving any services. So what were you experiencing at this time when you were in the service and having, I'm assuming, some symptoms and
yes,
some signs?
Lots of mania. I was buying stuff like every payday, boom, my paycheck was almost gone. And I'm like, And also I was heavy into drinking at that time. So between the drinking and the buying and not having money to do any other things, go to the Black Forest and see the cuckoo clocks or something like that. I didn't pay attention. I always knew I had money, you know, at the first of the next month. So I'm good. There were times when I would be depressed, but you can't really be depressed in the service because they really don't. The Army doesn't look upon that as a valid thing. So until you're out of the service, and then they look at everything.
You left the service in 1990. Mm-hmm. How long after leaving did you find out that you had a mental illness?
Shortly after, because I also wanted to have an HIV test done, and you had to see a psychologist to be able to have at that time to be able to have that done through the VA. And I guess in talks with her, that really came up, and we hadn't decided on medicine at the time, but she knew that there was definitely a diagnosis. But going back a little bit, when I met my now ex, when I was with him, I went through some psychiatry and psychology as well, and I got on Prozac, and I think that was the first medicine, and that was because I seen the highs and I seen the lows, and they were predominant, they were like happening a lot. So got on Prozac, then I became like an automaton. I went to work, I came home, I slept, I went to work, I came home, I slept. Didn't enjoy life at all, so I had to get off of that.
Just going through the motions,
yeah.
Kind of a robot. Yeah.
And then with the HIV, the medicines, there was an interaction from Prozac, so they had to switch me. But as I change HIV medications, I have to change mental health medications as well, because adverse reactions. Luckily now, in the computer, when they put in a new medication, it goes and checks all the other medications, and if there's an interaction, then they have to decide, well, do we take this one or do we change this one? But they have to work together in order to be able to get that done.
And prior to that system, you were just sort of going through a trial and error process.
Yes.
That can be very stressful, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So how long do you think that you were experimenting with various medications before you really found something solid that worked?
Until 2019.
Okay.
Olanzapine has been the medication for me that works. The voices are like way out here now. They used to be like right here, right in front of my face. Now they're like, it seems miles
far
away.
Far off in the background.
Yeah. I still have to listen to a radio at night to keep them silenced. Because when they were like right in my face, I would be sleeping in a dream. And they would interfere, and I'd wake up.
Hmm.
And I'm like, it was a dream. They're like, no, it was real. You were really doing that. I'm like, also in 2008, which brought more of the voices on, is when I started using drugs. And I used drugs on and off until 2016. And that's when that's when I had some visits to what the VA calls the 520 in Palo Alto, which is the mental health, behavior health unit.
Is it a secured?
It's a very secure.
Secured psychiatric unit?
Yep. And I would go in with meth-induced psychosis.
Mm.
At first there was psychosis, but when the test came back, then they found out it was meth-induced psychosis. I had quite a few visits there. Sometimes just for rest and rehabilitation, even though the voices were still there, I wasn't on anything, I just needed a break.
So do you feel like your mental health symptoms are the reason that you sought out the use of...
Self-medicating?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And I quit drinking in 2009, which helped a lot. And I stopped using drugs December 9th, 2016. So I'm 2 years, 7 months right now.
Incredible.
So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
How do you compare where you're at now versus where you were, say, prior to receiving your diagnosis? How have you grown? How have you changed? How is your life different now in 2019 through all of these, you know, trials and tribulations and experiences that you've had prior to your diagnosis and then after receiving your diagnosis and getting the supports that you need? How are you today versus that person before?
Now that I've actually found, or me and the VA found the medication that works for me, stability is definitely there. And my daily life is not centered in being manic most of the time and then depressed when I'm done with the mania spell, or there's more cohesiveness to it.
That is the voice of James, this month's Compass House Clubhouse member interview from Compass House, Southern Oregon Compass House in Medford. In this month's edition of Compass Radio, we are talking now to Elizabeth Hazelwood, Compass House Executive Director. You can join the conversation on the exchange, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. This is a person who has quite a few challenges to overcome.
Absolutely. It definitely, especially when we talk about our veteran population, there's a lot of complex issues that often they deal with that are different from the other population because they've had a different life, and getting treatment at the VA is very good treatment, but oftentimes people are afraid to admit, especially coming from a military background, that they have a mental health diagnosis.
And it seems like that just trying to turn to the general population for some sort of help, understanding, assistance is a bit tricky because, again, we have, what, 4% of the country's population that can actually talk about being veterans?
Right. And it is definitely challenging. And there's so many different providers within the VA system that navigating that is incredibly challenging sometimes. Thankfully, they are working really hard at making that easier to navigate. And the VA, like in White City, is really working on streamlining to make sure that our veterans get the care that they need.
And so do you find a lot of outreach from Southern Oregon, Southern Oregon Rehabilitation Center Clinics? Everybody still calls it the DOM from when it was the VA domiciliary.
Absolutely. We work really closely with them as far as referral basis, but then also once people become members that are veterans, making sure that they get the connection and the services they need there as well. They are really working on really making it a great place to walk in and get treatment for our veterans. If you haven't had a chance to go down and see the changes, you really should.
It was something that James said early in the interview about he talked about his messed up home life, that he was living with an aunt and uncle because of violence at the home. But the fact that he felt like he had to hide his feelings, he had to hide feeling depressed and things like that. This seems like it's a fairly constant story and certainly an exacerbating factor for somebody who's trying to cope with mental illness.
Absolutely. And it comes from stigma. When people first start feeling those symptoms, they don't feel comfortable talking about it because of the fact that even still today, mental health is not treated the same as medical health.
Well, but we're getting any better. I mean, we are over time. I mean, the fact that we talk about it fairly openly once a month, it certainly helps our audience understand that. But are people getting to a point where, I know I probably mentioned this before, I get raked over the coals every time I use the word stigma, so I've decided not to anymore. But then I find people who are in the mental health field use it still to describe the fact that they feel separated from society.
I like the changes that we see. Even just this past week with the teenagers speaking out about mental health days in school, it's being addressed in a different way, and that is beautiful to see that people are beginning to look at mental health differently. And I feel like we are making a lot of progress. We have a long way to go, though, as well.
So that's an interesting point you bring up, because that was an Oregon legislative move. Actually, by law now, a student can have other excused absences from school, and these now include mental health.
Absolutely. And it should be, because especially in teenage years is when a lot of people first begin to have symptoms. And that is when behavioral health treatment really needs to begin. And we need to normalize it. That way people do feel safe and able to share what's going on.
So it seems like even in the best of circumstances, the teenage years are going to feature a lot of upheaval, a lot of figuring out who you are, a lot of, you know, trying on different guises and maybe doing as James did and going into the military when you get out of high school. But at what point should a person think in terms of this doesn't seem like they're doing well? You know, there may be a problem. This is more than just teenage angst.
I think that is something that we struggle with, all of us. But I think having the open conversations with our children, with our family members, with community members about, hey, how are you feeling? And just like we get medical physicals yearly, going in and having a mental health check when you're a teenager to talk through and make sure what you're feeling is normal, and touching base.
Elizabeth Hazelwood is here once again for our Compass Radio segment. She's the executive director of Southern Oregon Compass House in Medford. If you have questions, comments about what you've been hearing about mental health, join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. We've talked a lot about the search for diagnosis and the proper medication, and James certainly recounts his issues with that, trying to make sure also that his mental health medications didn't interfere with his HIV medications. Are the medical people getting better than they were at the time he was first getting? Here's your Prozac, try this.
They are. There's been a lot of new medications coming out recently, and a lot of our members report that they really feel like they're a lot better options when it comes to medication management. And also behavioral health is being looked at more integratively. So they're not so siloed. So people are looking at what medications you're taking on the medical side, how that will affect behavioral health medications and things along those lines. So there's been a lot of progress made on making sure that we integrate.
I had a private conversation recently about the difference between the institutionalization of the past, the warehousing of people, and the idea of community care that we talk about today. In the past, society was less aware of mental illness, but people were with it, were less free, were either locked up or on drugs or both. Have we come up with a consistently good model of community mental health care and funded it fully?
No, we have not. Behavioral health still tends to be very underfunded nationally and also here in Oregon. And then also investing in preventative community-based mental health care still hasn't become a priority. So oftentimes most of the funding goes to the crisis level because people end up being in the hospital, where if they would have been able to get preventative treatment ahead of time, it might not have gotten to that level.
Some sense of hygiene and taking care of yourself early in a process rather than when things turn acute.
Absolutely.
So we have a little time left to talk about the general situation at Compass House right now. Quite a state of flux. I know when I went to go link to the website the other day, it said it was under construction. And then when the first version of the interview came back, we had some interesting sounds there as well. So what's going on with you folks?
We are completely under construction. We are going to be relaunching our website when we move into our new home to make it match and to have all of the new information. But we are moving on August 1st. We will no longer be located on 6th Street where we are now. We will be located directly across the street on Ivy Street at our new permanent home, which we are incredibly excited about. We will be offering new and expanded services, including laundry facilities and shower facilities for our homeless members, an expanded career center and education center. It's wonderful.
And what's the usual rate of visits a day that you get from people just coming through Compass House?
On average, we serve 41 people a day.
Mm-hmm.
As we move, that can expand greatly. We don't plan on moving. The space that we're moving into can actually host up to 300 people a day.
Wow. Okay, so you definitely are able to expand some stuff and more services as well, you're saying.
Yes, absolutely. We're able to look forward and expand our transportation services to make sure our people can get to appointments. We're also looking to expand our housing services as well as the current ones that we have around employment, education, socialization, building life skills, and having a place where people can come and are wanted and needed.
At some point, you'll look back on the transition and laugh, but not feeling very funny at the moment, is it?
Construction is always one of those challenging things. And when you buy and renovate a historic building in a historic downtown, there's lots of fun surprises in that.
There are indeed. Okay, so that is the move of Southern Oregon Compass House. August 1st, the big date for moving across the street. Elizabeth Hazelwood is the executive director. We heard earlier from James about his story of coping with mental illness. And it was an interview by Galen Thoreau, who's the Compass House Outreach Coordinator. Thank you, Galen. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
And thank you, James. And thank you for listening. That'll do it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. We'll talk about criminal justice, or in the terms of the book author, Blind Injustice, in hour number 2 coming up.